Hello, everybody. This is Doug with Emotional Fair Journey, and I am here again today with psychotherapist David Fetter. How you doing, David?
I'm doing great. How are you doing, Doug?
It's a wonderful day. We had a nice long weekend after the Memorial Day weekend, so it's Tuesday. So feels like a Monday, but everything's going well. Thank you.
Well, that's great to hear. And you know, as I was telling you before, you know here we just, well, at least I do, but I think many of the people out here in Toronto, we just wait for this time of year. And as I was mentioning to you last weekend, we had snow, but now we're up to beautiful sunshine, and the grass is green, and that always lifts up our spirits.
Yeah. Oh, no doubt. No doubt. Well, hopefully your lockdown up there will stop and end soon, and you can really get out and about. So kind of get back to normal.
Yeah, we're. That's the other thing. You know, we're still in a lockdown since early April. So it's been a long haul this last April of 2021. So it's been a long haul, and everybody's biting at a bit to get out, and people are mm-hmm. getting. More and more people are getting vaccinated, and just for anybody listening who might be a Montreal Canadiens fan, which is my hometown, and of course the Montreal Canadiens are still my team. We defeated Toronto Maple Leafs last night, which is fantastic. It's one of those things that I really look forward to, Montreal beating Toronto.
Yeah, well, there you go. You know, nothing better than playoff hockey. You know, I think some of the most exciting moments in sports are when there's one team that's down by a goal with about 5 minutes to go. That's like the best, the most intense 5 minutes you'll ever watch in any sport, I think, especially in the playoffs.
Hockey was always a big part of my life. Like, I played hockey and not playing much now, but it's always been... You know, it's a combination of hockey in general, and the Montreal Canadiens has always been a very big part of something I do in my free time, and love it.
Yeah, awesome. So they have senior citizens mm-hmm. leagues up there, huh? Is that what you're saying?
Well, they do, but I hung them up a long time ago.
All right. Well, listen, I appreciate you talking with me again here today, and we have a pretty good...
Yeah, we got that last comment. I think that last comment is where we'll end this call. So.
funny. This week, or this month, I should say, we're going to talk about a topic that I think we you and I both run into quite a bit, and that is a situation where... the unfaithful person is having a difficult time, or is trying to make a decision as to whether to stay in his marriage or leave the marriage for the affair partner. It's a situation, again, like I said, that's we run into quite a bit. So why don't we go ahead and kick things off? We've got a few questions that came to mind, and hopefully we'll be able to put out some good information for people, because I know this is an important topic.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So in your experience, David, what would you say is the typical mindset of the unfaithful person who's having this difficult time in deciding between his or her spouse and their affair partner?
Good question. Typical is certainly not a word I use often or freely when speaking about issues related to infidelity. and the reason being that recovering from infidelity is just, in my opinion, not a one-size-fits-all proposition. And what I find is that each individual or couple who I meet with needs to be understood on an individual basis, because each situation is and each person is different and nuanced in its own way. So having said that, just to return to your question, about what the mindset of an unfaithful person might be who is having a difficult time deciding whether to commit to their spouse or the affair partner, what I find is that it varies for different people depending on the reason why they had the affair. In other words, was the person, for example, suffering from a mental health issue, such as depression or mania? Were some of the person's needs not being met in the marriage? And an extension of that is, was the person in a marriage that was unsatisfying in some way? You know, Esther Perel talks about, years ago, it would take a whole village to meet the needs of an individual. And now what we do, because we typically don't live in those kind of villages that she was referring to, we look to our spouse to meet all of our needs. And that's a very, very challenging task, for sure. Or does the person have unresolved issues from childhood? And I find that the mindset of the unfaithful person will be different depending on the reason for why they had the affair in the first place. So what's the origin of the affair? So as an example, if a person who's depressed attributes the alleviation of their depressive symptoms to the affair partner, they may have difficulty ending the affair because they have a fear that their depression will return. And whether that, having said that, when I say that, I think about, okay, whether that is true or not is often not even the issue at the time, because what is the issue is the person believes that. On the other hand, sometimes it is true, so it may be true. On the other hand, in a committed relationship, because it's difficult for a spouse, as I said, to meet every single need of the other spouse, when those needs are met by the affair partner, the involved partner may have difficulty ending the affair because of that person's belief that the only person who can satisfy those needs is the affair partner. So we can see that there really is no one-size-fits-all answer to this question, and there are many reasons for why a person who is having an affair will have difficulty deciding on which relationship to commit to because of that. And, this is, I'm not suggesting, for any hurt partners listening, I'm not suggesting that that the hurt partner should, feel sorry for the involved partner or that this is, or what I'm saying is an excuse for the involved partner to be in this, confused state or inability to make a decision. But these are just, these are just the realities of it. And one last point that I want to make is that the situation is confusing for both spouses and often for the affair partner as well. And the involved partner should work to resolve their confusion as soon as possible, as the situation can and often does become, this is how I refer to it, it can become emotionally abusive for the hurt partner to be in that ongoing state of uncertainty, not knowing, is my marriage ending? Is my marriage continuing? Am I going to be with my spouse? Am I going to be separated? It's a really, really untenable situation for the hurt partner. So definitely, every effort should be made to resolve the confusion, so that everybody, can move on with their lives.
Mm-hmm. So maybe also we can expand a little bit since you mentioned the hurt partner there. I mean, what typically do you see is, the mindset when their spouse is in this period of limbo, for lack of a better term, where they can't seem to make up their mind?
You're asking about the impact on the mindset of the hurt partner?
Yes. Yeah.
Well, as I said, the situation, as in most cases, is very hard for the hurt partner. And if the hurt partner doesn't take care of themselves, they can find themselves in this state where they experience the effects of a toxic cocktail of confusion, hurt, frustration, and anger for a long time. And their days can be, you know, filled with feelings of being up, you know, 1 minute and down the next minute, or up 1 hour and down the next hour. And this could go on, and that person can feel that up and down, you know, confusion and emotional imbalance and pain several times a day, on the same day.
Right.
And I refer to that state as, you know, being in a state of chronic imbalance. And, you know, when I'm working with somebody who who basically gives up all of their power to the involved partner who cannot decide what they want to do, then, you know, you could just imagine the position that leaves the hurt partner in when they're giving up all their power to someone who is themselves extremely confused. So, and some people, if you just add, you know, this is back to the involved partner, if you just add to the involved partner that some involved partners are just, you know, they may be people pleasers, so they don't want to hurt anybody. So they, you know, that gives them motivation to keep it going for as long as they can, because this way they don't have to hurt they believe that they're not hurting their spouse, the hurt partner, even though they are. But they tell themselves they're not, you know, by not pulling the pin on the marriage or whatever, they're not hurting their partner, which is just not true at all. And they also, you know, if they have feelings for the affair partner, they think, well, you know, I'm not going to end the affair because I don't want to hurt anybody. So the, you know, these people who are people pleasers, or involved partners who are conflict avoiders, they will also keep it going for as long as they can. So back to your question, what often causes this chronic imbalance is a combination caused by the uncertainty of the involved partner, the inconsistent messages that the involved partner may give to the hurt partner. You know, I have somebody who, you know, two years later is telling the hurt partner that he loves her, and that is very confusing to the hurt partner. So you know, the confusing and inconsistent messages that are given, and either the unclear or sometimes absent boundaries of the hurt partner that defines how the hurt partner will allow themselves to be treated by the involved partner. Because without healthy boundaries, affairs, as I'm sure many of the listeners have already found unfortunately by experience, that the affair can go on for months and sometimes years, with the hurt partner being emotionally hurt and sometimes emotionally abused in the process. So the work the hurt partner need, in my opinion, should be encouraged to engage in, is to address the trauma caused by the betrayal, to get stronger emotionally, and to establish healthy boundaries and consequences that defines what they need in order to stay safe and be respected mm-hmm. by the involved partner.
Right. I know with a lot of the betrayed partners that I speak with, this. And we've talked about setting boundaries in the past. We've done, a couple sessions on that actually, but they find it very difficult to do because they feel that if they set boundaries, that it's going to drive their spouse even further into the arms of the affair partner and just give them another reason why they should choose the affair partner. You know, so it's hard for them to do that. Mm-hmm. And some of them choose instead to just kind of ride it out, you know, knowing that right. most affairs kind of die on their own at some point in time. So it sounds to me from your previous answer that you feel that setting boundaries is a better course of action.
I do, you know, but again, you need to look at, it's just incredibly important to look at every situation differently, because there's a couple that I'm working with right now, and I'm not working with the couple, but you know, the hurt partner is meeting with somebody else. And you know, if you take the approach, let me go back on that. I think the hurt partner needs to be encouraged to establish boundaries that that they're comfortable with, but also that helps that person, the hurt partner, to be respected, to be treated, you know, in a non-abusive manner, and that I think is critical. I think that needs to happen. I think it's the, you know, when the ultimatums are given, that you know, that you really need to look at what does that person, the hurt partner, really want? What is the hurt partner's ultimate goal? And what can the hurt partner live with? Because sometimes you're 100% right. Sometimes you know, you got to think outside of the box, and you got to think about, okay, well, you know, can I give this the time to run its course? And if I give the time for the affair to run its course, how do I protect myself? How do I look after myself? These are very important things that need to be considered. But, I mean, I just spoke with somebody a couple of weeks ago, and I said, you know, this is not a typical affair. There are more factors involved that need to be considered, and that's what I mean by really understanding each one, each case, each affair on an individual basis with the individuals involved. And I said, you know, sometimes you need to think outside of the box. And can you do that? When a therapist is telling a person, well, this is the way you do it, then you're not necessarily considering the needs of that particular individual, and that you know, cookie cutter approach, if you will, or that one size fits all doesn't fit all. And you could actually end up doing more damage. So I think that boundaries are boundaries are very, very important, but they have to be consistent with what that person wants and needs, because it's their life, not the therapist's life.
Right. And it's such a confusing thing, too, for the hurt partner, especially, because there's going to be, you know, talking with a lot of the hurt partners or betrayed partners, I hear stories or tales of, you know, where their husband or wife is kind of sending off mixed signals because they're becoming closer to them. You know, they may be doing things where, hey, you know, when he's home, we have a great time. We have a good sex life. We do all this sort of thing. And yet he's still in the affair and won't end the affair. And, you know, when he sees the other woman and he comes home and he or she is moody and grumpy and abusive and angry and, you know, all these sort of things. So it's kind of, you know, it's a very difficult period of time. And I know that a lot of the guys and women that I talk to who are unfaithful, they can stay in this particular situation forever if they're allowed to. I mean, you know, if they, you know, if there's no motivation or anything for them to stop that, they're basically getting both the best of both worlds. And, you know, why should they stop? So, I mean, what would you say to that?
Well, again, there isn't just one answer to give that will address every aspect of the question. I would say that my answer to the first question, where we started off our talk today, applies here as well. You know, with respect to reasons why the involved partner may have difficulty choosing between the two relationships. However, there's one type of affair that I want to mention, and that I didn't mention earlier, and those are referred to as rekindled romances. And rekindled romances was studied by the late Dr. Nancy Kalish, who is a psychologist. And actually, you and I spoke a few weeks ago about about stuff, and you mentioned her actually, and I looked her up, and there's a website that is still online, that she has. In these types of affairs, the state of limbo can be a result of the involved spouse being in a happy marriage, but then rediscovering someone with whom they shared an emotional previous history. These were people who shared a previous relationship, and it doesn't matter whether there was physical intimacy or not, but they shared a previous relationship that ended unnaturally, meaning that people may have moved away, or because some of these are relationships that were that took place when the people were 15 or 16 years of age. So families moving away or different circumstances like that. In other words, there was no major argument, no major fallout, nothing like that. So there was a relationship that ended unnaturally, and for whom the strong feelings of what may have been a first love never ended, but instead may have only been repressed or, in a sense, buried alive. In these cases, the affair partner is often seen as a person who can give the involved partner back the old pieces of themselves that the involved partner themselves may have forgotten. So because there was something there, Dr. Kalish also points out that these relationships, once they get started again, they start in earnest. They start very rapidly. The feelings come back very quickly, because for example, when I met my wife, I needed to start to get to know her. I didn't know her before. So there was all of that period of courting where we got to know each other and things like that. But in these, rekindled romances, we don't need to, people don't need to do that. So things happen very quickly. And the other factor about these rekindled romances, it's also often seen by the involved partners as a second chance to make something right. So, you could see how powerful these rekindled romances are. But the confusion and the difficulty, in making a decision or getting out of the limbo, is that at the same time as the person may have these very, very strong and sometimes loving feelings towards the person they have now rekindled this romance with, the involved partner also may also love their spouse, because their spouse, they haven't had a falling out. And, in these kind of affairs, the individual may say to me, I love my wife, but I also have these very strong feelings for the affair partner who is part of a rekindled romance. So hence the predicament and the extended state of limbo that must be resolved. But you're right. I mean, in all of these affairs, that where somebody is in limbo, many times, I mean, the limbo will go on for a very long time. And sometimes they'll come to an end because either the hurt partner or in some cases the affair partner will just say, I can't do this anymore. I can't live with your confusion anymore. This has gone on for years and I need to get on with my life. So either the affair partner or the hurt partner will, or sometimes both, will just say, but I can't be here anymore. And that's how the affair may come to an end. But there was a learning curve, for me too, because, years ago, before I really started doing this work, I used to think that this limbo, this limbo situation is all about the involved partner just wanting to have both worlds or the best of both worlds or wanting to have, everything. But But what I realized over you know, years and years of working with people in this situation is that there's usually a reason. It's not just being selfish. There's usually the involved partner being selfish. It's more than that. It's usually, you know, something like these, you know, rekindled romances or family of origin issues that were never resolved or other things that I've already talked about.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Thanks. You know, one question that I get from a lot of betrayed partners too is that they're wondering if they should. And again, I know there's no one answer for everybody, but in general, I guess the question about maintaining a physical relationship with the unfaithful person while they're still in this limbo period. What are your thoughts on that?
I think the knee-jerk reaction to this question, you know, for most people would be to say, absolutely not. You know, but I believe that people need to decide what they do for themselves. And you know, that the person, you know, in this case, the hurt spouse, who's considering continuing physical relations with their spouse, you know, hopefully the hurt partner is speaking to someone like you know, a therapist or someone like yourself, and who's really helping them sort through why they're doing what they're doing, and you know, what the aftermath of it is going to be for themselves. So I think that there are a few things that the hurt partner might consider in answering this question. And, you know, I just think that these are really important. And, you know, one question is to explore is for the hurt partner to ask themselves, you know, why are they continuing to be physically intimate with the involved partner while the involved partner is still actively continuing an affair? So what is the secondary gain, or what is the motivation for the hurt partner, you know, to do that? If, for example, if it is to compete with the affair partner, you know, I think in most people would say that's not a very good reason. And I've seen situations like that backfire on the hurt partner, just dismally. And and there was a lot of regret afterwards because they felt very foolish, and it wasn't a good situation at all. So you know, competing with the affair partner, you know, is that what they're doing? Are they wanting to win the involved partner back? Or is it to help the hurt partner feel wanted or desired again? I would say in general, you know, and there's many other reasons, but, you know, really excavating and, you know, digging away in conversation with the hurt partner to help the hurt partner understand why they are thinking of doing this it would be, you know, important and helpful. Because all of these reasons are, in my opinion, you know, in almost all situations, not good reasons to have physical intimacy with the involved partner, because the worry or the concern is that the hurt partner may be hurt again. The second issue or question is, what about STDs? And right. Is the hurt partner safe? In cases where there has been an affair, I always recommend that the hurt partner insist that the involved partner get tested before resuming physical intimacy. And in an active affair, can you really be sure? So, and I think the answer is obvious. So that's definitely an area of concern. And even, you know, and just about the STD and the testing, I mean, if the affair is active, well, you know, you do testing today, you know, somebody could contract an STD tomorrow. So it's not going to be helpful. But, you know, I think the person needs to think about their physical safety. But even once an affair has ended, there should be testing as well to right. protect the hurt partner, you know, to protect the hurt partner and also, you know, for the involved partner. And the final area that I think is so important is, you know, for the hurt partner to ask themselves, will they feel good about themselves the next day, or will they feel used, or will they feel embarrassed, or will they feel taken advantage of? So it's not, there's so many factors that go into, as you could see, any question that we talk about when it comes to infidelity. But when it comes to, you know, maintaining physical relations with your spouse during an affair, you know, I and during this limbo period, I think it's, I think that, you know, the best thing I could say is definitely be cautious.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Great. Good answer. Appreciate it. Now, as far as,
you're welcome.
Like when you're talking with an unfaithful person, is there a process that you recommend that they go through as, you know, when they try to make a decision between the affair partner or their spouse, you know, like, is it something that's like drawing a T on a paper and doing pros and cons, or is there something a little bit more, more strategic that you talk about?
Well, you know, it's a combination, I think, of, you know, learning about yourself and learning about what motivates you to do certain things. I think that that's helpful. But at the end of the day, I think there needs to be, as part of that process, a lot of, you know, confrontation, you know, in terms of not arguing or fighting with the involved partner or them doing something that I want them to do. But for me to, you know, point blank ask them things that make them think about what they're doing, because there is so much of the process is, you know, how can I put it, living in the dark, or convincing yourself that what you're doing is, like I said before, you know, I don't want to hurt anybody, so I'm a people pleaser, so I won't end my marriage and I won't end the affair. I'll just keep everybody happy. But meanwhile, you know, your spouse is miserable and you don't pay attention to that. So I always recommend that the involved partner, first of all, take a break from the affair partner. And I'm not talking about for, you know, a day or two. I'm talking about a significant period of time. You know, if you, because if you continue the affair while you're in this limbo state, you're always going to be in the chances are you're going to stay in this limbo state. Mm-hmm. So, because something that you need is being met through the affair. So, and sometimes the recommendation may be take a break from the affair and from your marriage, you know, from your spouse.
Right.
Take some time, you know, take some time to clear your head and, so that you could start thinking clearly. So I always speak about that. And then the process is psychoeducational, as well as, you know, there's a lot of support, because some of these things that people end up having to do or doing are difficult. It's difficult to end your marriage, or it's difficult to end an affair. So there's a lot to do with that as well. And as I mentioned, you know, confronting some of the distorted beliefs that sometimes an involved partner may have, such as the one I spoke about before, like I'm not really hurting my spouse or things like that, or you know, so confronting those kind of beliefs that are just not real is part of the process as well. So this is critical. Because if left to their own resources, and in most situations, this, as we've already said, the state of uncertainty can go on and on until, as I said, either the involved partner or the involved partner, you know, burns through their marriage or burns through the affair. Because in most cases, one or both of the either the hurt partner or the affair partner will get tired of waiting for the involved partner to make up their mind. So therapy would focus on unearthing the reason for the affair, what needs are being met by the affair, helping the involved partner to understand betrayal trauma, and developing empathy for the hurt partner's pain, and moving towards helping them make an informed decision about what they want to do. Because, you know, one of the things you and I talked about, I don't think we talked about it sort of in one of these sessions, but what we talked about is that not all affairs are intended to end. You know, some affairs, even though the statistics don't necessarily support it, there is a very small percentage of affairs that if they become full-blown relationships, is really where the involved partner should be. So so the process is to help them really get to where they want to be or where they should be in an informed way.
Mm-hmm. Okay, great.
And really, and break, you know, I just want to add, and to really break that state of limbo. Because, you know, I've met with people who talk about, you know, well, I'm married, I love my wife, I always, you know, I anticipated my life would be with my wife, the rest of my life, but I, you know, but I want to be with the affair partner, and you know, we need to help, or, you know, one of my goals in my practice is to help people get to where they need to be in order to have the life that is going to be, you know, fulfilling and help at the same time help everybody deal with, you know, the fallout of that, whether it be to work on the marriage and rebuilding the marriage, or, you know, in some cases marriages will end and people need help and support to get through that as well.
Right. Yeah, it's interesting. You talked about taking a break from the affair partner. Linda and I talked to a very seasoned therapist. We interviewed him years ago, probably about 8 or 9 years ago. And what he actually does is he calls the affair partner up during the session and says, look, John is going to take a break from you for 90 days, and he's going to work on his marriage at least 90 days. And, you know, if after 90 days, you know, he still wants to leave his marriage, then he's all yours. You kind of address it like that, but seemed to be effective for him anyway, because during that 90 days, it's, I think it kind of served to break that cycle and thought process and kind of turn the focus more on the marriage and everything. And it seemed to work for him.
Well, you know, the 90-day thing is, you know, I don't know if, I mean, I don't know which therapist you're talking about, but there was, you know, certainly, you know, in sex addiction, when we start treatment with an individual who has a sex addiction, once we've assessed, because as you know, one of my designations is certified sex addiction therapist, and once we have ascertained whether or not an addiction is present or not, we ask and encourage the person with the addiction to agree to a 90-day abstinence contract. So if it's an affair, or if it's massage parlors, or whatever the acting out behavior is, that person, the addict, is asked to abstain for 90 days, because the belief is that, you know, within the 90-day period, the person's prefrontal cortex and brain is going to come back online, and then you could start working with that person. So I'm not sure if the person you're speaking about is someone who was talking about sex addiction, or you know, taking that from the model and incorporating that. But you know, in the example you gave, you know, my preference is that it wouldn't be say the message to the affair partner would come from John, as opposed to in a proper way, as opposed to coming from someone else.
Yeah, it was done like in a put them on speakerphone during their set, during their joint session kind of a thing. So I thought I was kind of that was kind okay. of a unique approach. Anyway,
yeah, it is.
So we talked about a little bit about the evolved partners process. You know, at the same time, what are some things that the hurt spouse should be doing, you know, while their partner's trying to figure themselves out?
Yeah, good question. I think this support, you know, support for the hurt partner is so critically important. I also, you know, and for that person, for the hurt partners, I also recommend the in addition to therapy, I encourage a support group offered by a qualified professional. So they have people around them with whom the hurt partner can share their story. And also other supports, such as the supports you offer through your website, are so important. So really connecting with other people, because I, you know, in your program, I think there's a mentor program. There's a lot of information available. There's courses that people can take through your organization, you know, emotional affair recovery. And I think that is all really helpful. And having, so like I say, you know, having people around them with whom they could share their story, because situations like these are so difficult for the hurt partner, and the associated trauma that's experienced can be so damaging, both for now in the present as well as is in the future if not addressed. Self-esteem, confidence, the ability to trust other people, you know, whether or not it's in an intimate relationship or not, but especially in an intimate relationship, as well as one's future goals, you know, which are instantly impacted, are all, in my opinion, are all in need of repair. At the same time, while the hurt partner is at his or her weakest point and feeling most isolated, we as we've spoken here today, you know, we advise them to establish healthy boundaries and consequences, which is very difficult to do when we're not feeling good about ourselves. You know, I read not too long ago that in order to have healthy boundaries or to develop healthy boundaries and consequences, you have to have, relatively speaking, good self-esteem. And self-esteem is one of the things impacted when our spouse has an affair. So rebuilding that as quickly as possible is important. You know, and we do that through support, encouragement, which is very helpful, as well as the therapy. And that's, I feel the therapy may not be needed, you know, obviously for an ongoing basis, but it will be for a while, but not forever. But support and encouragement is needed, pretty much, I think, ongoing for at least for a while. Yeah. Often people, you know, when I talked about the isolation that people feel, often people don't want to speak to friends and family about the affair, either because of shame or embarrassment or worry that it's going to make it difficult if the hurt partner and the involved partner decide to work on their marriage and stay together, that it's going to make it harder if friends and involved and extended family know about what happens, so they keep it to themselves. But in my view, this is not a time to be alone, and people will get through this uncertain period of their life more easily if they have the support. So I absolutely encourage people to, you know, reach out for support, whether it be with, you know, people like myself and, you know, therapists or you know, people like yourself who run these great programs and offer mentoring and support and encouragement and what have you. Just, you know, I encourage the hurt partner to surround themselves with people who understand and people who care. So hence I suggest that the that every hurt partner who is listening to consider these recommendations as a level or a type of self-care for themselves.
Right. Great. And I would add to that too, that I think it's important if you're the unfaithful person to get some support as well, to talk to a friend or a trusted friend in some way who you feel can give you good advice, because there's so many people that try to go through this decision really on their own and don't have anybody to bounce ideas off of, or, you know, maybe talk some sense into, or whatever the case might be. So it's definitely, I think, helpful for all parties involved to talk to somebody, you know, whether it's just a vent or, you know, hopefully get some good sound advice as well.
Yeah, and I think I agree with you, and I think the critical, you know, phrase that you mentioned was get some good sound advice. And I think that you know, when we talk about a support group and who makes up the best support group, you know, the best support group, in my opinion, is made up of people who are not going to tell you what to do, but are people who are going to help you find your way by, you know, talking with you, being curious, asking questions, but not telling you, you know, you should leave or you should stay, or you know, talk down about your other spouse or what have you. It's really to help you find your way. And, you know, I spoke to somebody, you know, and it just gets to me every time he says it, but he says, you know, I speak to my friends, and they don't, you know, they tell me, oh, you finally got some courage, or you finally did something for yourself. Meanwhile, you know, it's totally devastating to his spouse, and encouraging him as though what he's doing by stepping outside of his marriage is the right thing to do. And, you know, that I would say is probably the worst support system a person can have. So surrounding yourself with people who understand, who are not going to tell you what to do, who are going to help you find your way, listen to what you have to say, ask you important questions or helpful questions, but not tell you what to do. And again, whether you're fortunate, you know, a person is fortunate enough to have a good friend like that, or a support group, or a person who really understands it, such as yourself, or a therapist, and get to work.
Yep, I agree 100%. Well, David,
yeah.
I appreciate it.
And I'm sorry, just before you say that, yeah. I just want to say that you know, everything that I said and everything that we talked about, in my opinion, needs to be condensed and really a lot of attention given to it, because the ongoing limbo and, you know, uncertainty and the chronic imbalance that I talked about, that, you know, people live in, that state of limbo has to be brought to an end as quickly as possible. And, you know, I encourage people to really make it a priority.
Yeah, I would agree. Very good, sir. I appreciate you spending the time with me today on this, and good answers and good advice, as always. Maybe you could give everybody an idea of how they can get a hold of you if they'd like to.
Yeah, that'd be great. Thank you. People can give me a call if they'd like. My phone number is 416-315-5107. Or if they prefer to just fire off an email, my email address is david@closeconnections.ca. That's david@closeconnections.ca. People can also visit my website at www.closeconnections.ca. And that's closeconnections .ca. If anybody's interested, they could leave their email address and sign up for a newsletter that I try to send out once every 4 to 6 weeks. Don't always accomplish that, but it's my goal. So those are the ways to get hold of me.
All right. Fantastic. I appreciate it, David.
Thank you very much again.
All right. You take care of yourself.
You as well. Bye-bye.